Hello, everyone. Thank you for being here for my talk. I'm a master's student at Texas A&M University, and I'm studying the cotton flea hopper. Today, I'm going to talk to you about my most recent project. Let me move this a little down. I am using the gut content of the cotton flea hopper to identify host plants it's feeding on. But first, I'd like to talk about the importance of the cotton flea hopper. It is an early season cotton pest. Its scientific name is Pseudotomoscelis seriatus reuter. It is a murid, so it has piercing, sucking mouth parts. And so when it uses cotton as a host, it feeds on developing buds known as squares. And so pictured here is a blasted square that will ultimately abort and cause delayed maturity or yield loss. Additionally, the flea hoppers can feed on terminals, which would cause irregular growth or crazy cotton. And it is consistently a top pest of cotton in Oklahoma and in Texas. And in 1999, it was one of the number one pests of US cotton. So looking at the cotton flea hopper life cycle, it begins as an egg, emerges and has 5 nymphal instars, each of which can be distinguished by wing development or head capsule width, and then it becomes an adult. Now, the cotton flea hopper is a multivolting insect, which means it has multiple generations throughout the course of the year, with the egg being the overwintering stage. So, depending on the time of the year, the flea hopper will utilize different host plants. So, starting in the spring, it will initially emerge, feed and develop on local host plants, and then seek out preferred host plants, such as horse mint, pictured here. The current dogma is that they will accumulate in mass numbers on horse mint, and then as it senesces, they will infest cotton, where they can have about 3 generations. Then, as croton becomes available, they'll move there and continue to reproduce. Croton plays a key role in the cotton flea hopper life cycle. Not only is it a reproductive host, but it is the overwintering host for the eggs. So starting in September, the flea hoppers will begin laying diapausing eggs in the terminal portion of croton. The incidence of diapause will increase through September, with most eggs laid in diapause after October 1st, and that's where they will overwinter. Now, I described a very linear system, so from horse mint to cotton to croton, but that's not always the case. There are years where horse mint may overlap with cotton, or cotton and croton will overlap, and sometimes a small window of opportunity where horse mint, cotton, and croton will all be available at the same time. But for today's talk, I'm mostly focused on what does the cotton flea hopper feed on before infesting cotton? And the cotton flea hopper actually has over 160 documented host plants. The 3 previous plants are the most focused on, but there are so many across 35 different families. But there are some issues with this list. Some of the sampling data is not provided or not included, and across all of these different studies, there's a variation in host plant identification methods. So some of them have all-encompassing statements where they list the plants that are hosts and include other succulent plants, but don't have any data to back up that statement. Other studies are based on lab feedings, but if the cotton flea hopper is an obligatory feeder, it's going to feed on that in the lab, but that may not occur in the field. And then we have sweep methods. And that's the current method used to identify host plants of the cotton flea hopper, but it is not perfect either. It could be a coincidence that the flea hopper is moving from one plant to its preferred host plant when you sweep it up, or you might not detect the plant that it was actually feeding on in the field. So, how can we actually identify what the cotton flea hopper is feeding on? We can look at the plant DNA in the gut. This has been demonstrated with grasshoppers, large chewing insects. They actually dissected out the gut before amplifying the DNA, and it's been done with smaller insects such as Drosophila suzukii, small sponging insects. But we're wondering, can we do this with the flea hopper, a small piercing sucking insect? So my research objective is to demonstrate a proof of concept that we can use the gut content of the cotton flea hopper to identify host plants. And for today's talk, I'm specifically going to talk about the proof of concept. We're not completely done with the study, so I'm going to take you through our experimental approach as outlined below, what we have done, what we're in the middle of doing, and what we plan to do. So, to get started, we had 5 plant or chloroplast-specific primers, 5 different combinations And so we wanted to test them on green beans just to make sure that we can detect green beans in the initially. And so taking a look at the gel here, it has 11 lanes. So the first lane marked M is for our marker. So this lets us know the size of the bands on the gel. And if you look at the first five lanes, those are five different combinations of those chloroplast specific primers. Then they were repeated again in 6 through 10. So for example, 1 and 6 are the same primers. And the size that we were expecting to see was at the 500 mark. And if you look here, that's exactly what we saw. So, okay, the primers work on green beans. What about green beans in the gut content of the cotton flea hopper? So that's exactly what we did. We reared flea hoppers in the lab on green beans and used the gut content of single insects and ran a PCR. Again, the M is for the marker, and we have lanes 1 through 5 with the same primers, and this is from the DNA of one single flea hopper. And that's repeated again with a second flea hopper with lanes 6 through 10. Although this is a messy PCR or a messy gel, if you look at the 500 marker, you can see that we successfully detected DNA in the gut of the cotton flea hopper. Now we are still working on optimizing PCR so we can clean up this gel, but we were able to prove the concept that you can detect plant material or plant DNA from the gut content of the cotton flea hopper. So with that, we moved on with our study and started collecting samples. We started with controls in lab. So this is a flea hopper that we reared on green beans in the lab. We also did this with horse mint. Then we went out and did target-specific sweep samples. So I'm out collecting flea hoppers that were feeding on horse mint pictured here. We aspirated nymphs off of cotton, and we swept croton as well. Then we went out and did weekly sweep samples of mixed plants across different fields around the Brazos River bottom. And so once we had all of these samples back in the lab and processed, stored in the freezer, it was time for DNA extraction. So I want to point out that we extracted DNA from single whole-bodied flea hoppers. And just for perspective here, this is a flea hopper nymph in a 1.5 mil tube, so they're very tiny. We did not dissect the gut as done with the grasshopper study because we use chloroplast specific primers. And then once we extracted the DNA, we quantified it to see how much we had. So that brings us to where we are in the study. Between holidays and conferences, we are right in the middle of prepping for Amplicon sequencing, so we're not quite done yet. And so once we have that ready to go, we will run that on the Illumina MiSeq at the USDA. And shout out to Dr. Perkins here helping me with this. So once we get our sequences back, run on the Illumina MiSeq, we're going to do a BLAST. And so if you're not familiar with what a BLAST is, we're basically going to take our sequences, compare them with sequences already in a database, and see what matches, so what plants the cotton flea hopper is feeding on. So what we're expecting is to be able to identify it to the family level. However, we might be limited to what plants are in the database. And if that is the case, we are prepared to go out to the fields that we collected our samples from and sequence the chloroplast from those plants to put them into the database to be able to run our data again and get some matches. So future directions, we plan to cross-reference our results with the field composition. Pictured here is a student worker who helped me go out to each of our locations. We took a one square meter PVC pole and counted from 30 different spots within each of those fields, all the different plants within that square. So we have a pretty good idea of what species of plants are within the fields. And then we expect to be able to answer other questions knowing how long the DNA stays in the flea hopper gut. So we'll be able to understand or know what do nymphs develop on when preferred host plants are unavailable, and what did adults feed on before infesting cotton. And then ultimately, we'll be able to apply this technique to other piercings, sucking insects, such as Liguus, stink bug, and the newly emergent leaf-footed bug. And this is important because if we know what plants are harboring these populations before they infest cotton, we can implement management strategies and kind of nip that in the bud. So in summary, the cotton flea hopper is a cotton pest with an extensive host plant list. We've demonstrated that there's potential to confirm or identify new host plants through the gut content, and this method may be applied beyond the scope of the cotton flea hopper, which has implications on pest management strategies. And I'd like to acknowledge everybody that's helped me with this project, everybody at the USDA that's gone out and helped me with sweep samples, put them in alcohol, especially Dr. Perkin. I would be lost without you. And with that, I will take y'all's questions. Thank you for your time. Yes. Because they're so tiny, we're not exactly sure how much plant DNA, I guess, will be in their gut, how much we need to detect it, or so if they have more horse mint than cotton, are we going to detect both or just one of them? I know initially we were thinking we might have to pool them together to get enough DNA, but with preliminary data, we saw that we had enough within a single gut, but maybe pooling them together, we could see more of a spectrum of what they're feeding on, and that would maybe increase the total amount of those ones that they fed on just a little bit.
And then on your analysis, like you may, we can talk about this later, but you may want to compress your data before you do the last whole GS run.
Mm-hmm.
So you could probably assemble that and get numbers from that, and then just the last, it'll just be a few.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions?
Any other questions for Kristen?
Well, thank you all.